Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back for another awesome episode. We have another incredible guest. Carrie Dominick is with us today. She is a pelvic floor PT out of Long Beach, California. Luckily, we were introduced by mutual friend Phil Dominguez, who's going to be the upcoming podcast guest too. I have been saying for the longest time, I want to get a pelvic floor PT on this show to talk about so many things that come up with the 40 plus moms population. And I have no doubt this is going to be such a good episode. So Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Happy to have you. So now, before we get into the stuff that I have for us today, I'm curious, pelvic floor PT is a pretty specific niche and a pretty specific path. Is there a reason why you pursued specifically pelvic floor physical therapy?
I tell people I kind of got into this by accident. This was not in my plans. I've been a PT since 2006, so for a few years now. And back then, pelvic floor therapy was very new. And we learned about it in school, but you know, it was just another option. But when I went to look for my first job, I didn't want to work in a busy, busy clinic. I'm like, I became a physical therapist, and this job that I took, one of my classmates had interned at, and they did half like regular PT, like sports ortho, and then half pelvic floor therapy. And I was like, nah, I'll try it out, you know? And by the end of that, I worked there for 3 years. Yeah. And I really, really liked pelvic floor therapy because it was just like, in the early 2000s, there was not social media. There was not so much information on the internet. And so my patients back then had struggled for a long time. And it's just like, it's very intimate. So talking about a lot of really personal things, but it also can be so life-changing. So I'm happy to talk with you and other trainers about how you can help your patients too, because this is like one thing I really see is, you know, people have bladder issues or pelvic pain and they don't want to exercise. And then that creates a whole host of other problems, as you know.
And it seems like from the outside looking in, there is a little bit of a stigma attached to pelvic floor PT, because we think, and it's like, well, my mom didn't do pelvic floor PT. My mom's mom didn't do it. And there's like this thought of like, is it really necessary? Like, what would you say to somebody that may have just had their first kid or maybe even thinking about starting a family, and you, with your knowledge, what would you tell them to be ready for or prepared for? Like, what would warrant physical therapy with the pelvic floor?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, I tell my young moms, my new moms, like to be proactive with your health, right? Like, hopefully that's why they're working with you, because they want to be proactive. But if we address things sooner, they're not going to be such a bigger problem later, which is kind of what I see right now is like my older women, like 50, 60, 70, I see 80-year-olds in the clinic. So it's never too late, but it gets harder for them to make changes and to address these issues. Whereas if something comes up in your pregnancy or when you're younger or early postpartum, you know, you can correct that earlier and not have to deal with this for your whole life.
Yeah. And when we talk about things that need correcting and things like that, I know some of the big things that come up are things like incontinence, or like if somebody had a C-section and needs abdominal style, like physical therapy to address that, or diastasis recti and things like that. So I'd love to talk about things in particular, like one by one. So yeah. I know the big one, I remember when I used to work at a gym of like 300 plus people in person, we had something called the golden rule, which was basically don't make the moms jump, because without fail, we'd have like at least two or three running to the bathroom right after we were done.
Yeah.
So when it comes to incontinence, what are some things that you think would be really good for people to do if they're not already doing it? And what actually causes incontinence that we can potentially fix?
Yeah, that's a deep question. but let's get into it. So number one, I would say Kegels are not the only answer.
We'll start it off. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say Kegels are not the only answer, and you can train to get back to jumping. You know, sort of in the longevity perspective, I think about if we stop jumping when you're 30, like that has effects on our bone health, on our muscle mass, right? Like our cardiovascular system. Yes, there's other ways to address those things, but there's ways to get this back. Incontinence is a lot of things, right? So to start off, there's kind of two main types of incontinence. There's what we call urge incontinence. So like, I can't make it to the toilet on time. And then there's what we call stress incontinence. So it's like the physical stress of running, jumping, coughing, sneezing. Pregnancy is a big factor that can cause that. Just the weight of the baby, right? Sits right on top of your bladder, gravity, any type of birth, but especially a vaginal birth, right? Everything widens, stretches, sometimes tears. So all that has an effect. But I do tell my moms, like, C-section, you can still have incontinence. You can still have these issues because the pregnancy itself. And I also see women who have never been pregnant that have this. So it's not just pregnancy that causes it. So once we sort of figure out the cause, so we'll talk more about like the physical, like stress incontinence, running, jumping. And I would say a lot of people, it's not just Kegels. So yes, in the clinic, we check your pelvic floor strength to see, are your pelvic floor muscles weak? But also I'm looking like, do they have coordination? Because really our pelvic floor is more like a trampoline. It should sort of absorb with each jump or each step. So people think like, I just need to hold a Kegel the whole time, but that's really impossible. Like there's no muscle we can just turn on the whole time. And that's not a good strategy, right? It's like that muscle's gonna fatigue and then you're gonna pee. So we need to work on the muscle coordination of getting the muscle to turn on when we want and to turn off when we want. And at least half the time, or if not more, one of the problems I see with my patients is their muscles, their pelvic floor muscles don't turn off. And, you know, sometimes I think that comes from habit out of fear, right? Of like, I don't want to let go because I'm afraid I'm going to pee. But from the personal training perspective, also what I address, especially if it's running, jumping, physical activity, is their form. Like, how is their lower body strength? Are they landing with a soft landing? Because really our leg muscles, our hip, our butt, those are our big muscles that should absorb the impact and not these little tiny pelvic floor muscles trying to like absorb all the impact. So at least half of my treatment, especially with patients who they have leakage with exercise, is let's look at your exercise. Like, let's look at your jumping form. Let's look at your running form. Let's test out your lower body strength. Like, is there a deficit on one side or the other? Is there tightness on one side or the other? So that is at least half of the treatment that I think is a big missing piece or misconception, that it's just Kegels, right? It's just pelvic floor strength. But to me, especially in exercise, it's both are equally important. Because a lot of athletes will come to me and their pelvic floor is actually fine. And so then we got to look at their athletic abilities. And then sometimes it's other things too, like, are you guzzling water right before your workout and then your bladder fills up and you have to go? Do you have poor bladder habits? Like, are you just always going to the bathroom every time you have a little tiny urge? And so then your bladder shrinks. So it's much more multifaceted than just Kegels. So I think, you know, from a non-pelvic floor therapist, there's a lot of things you can address.
Mm-hmm. And I like how that you spoke on the fact that, like, yes, there's all the things that we could do that are invasive and things that like need to be addressed. But once we get to that point where it's like, okay, now we got to think about things like your movement quality and things like that. This is like where the meshing of like personal training and physical therapy happens, and where personal trainers can step in and be like, okay, I'm going to reach out to Carrie since my client worked with her and say, okay, what would you like to keep doing so that that way we don't have these issues resurface over and over again? And then that turns into somebody's warm-up exercise, or it turns into their off day routine and things like that. So it can work really, really well together. And I like how you touched on the stiffness versus like the ability to contract and relax. Because I think a lot of people think, I just got to be tense all the time. I just got to squeeze every single muscle I can because I want to look a certain way. But I mean, it's funny, in athletic populations, we want a fast contract, relax response. Like we want to, that's like some of the elite athletes have the ability to get really stiff really fast, but then they relax really fast. Kind of like the traditional like college athlete that walks around like they've got no energy whatsoever. And then they go and play and they're like, fast as hell.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So,
when it comes to the Kegels in particular, because I know this is like a big, big thing that people think of, what's all the hype about and when is it appropriate and inappropriate?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think this is sort of like what's out there is just do Kegels, right? So that's what people see. So that's what they think they have to do. And I think also the medical community like tags onto this, right? Like doctors just tell people like, oh, you had a baby, do Kegels, or you had a baby, you're just going to pee yourself. Like that's just normal. And forever, I'm trying
kinda
to tell
like
people.
Kind of like eat less, move more.
Yes. Like just very generic, but like maybe that, and I tell people like, maybe that works for a certain population, right? Like a certain percentage of people, like just doing some Kegels is probably the answer. But for majority, and I mean, if they end up in my clinic, obviously that wasn't enough. But also I think, you know, people hear like do Kegels and they don't really know what that means. And it is a difficult thing because these muscles should just work automatically. So they are difficult to work and to know what to do because there's also nothing really to see. And so it's challenging. And what I often see in the clinic is I don't know how to work these muscles. So I just squeeze everything, my butt, my abs, my legs, like hoping that my pelvic floor also squeezes. So I tell people like kind of my two main cues for women is sort of like, can you cut off your urine stream? Like think about holding back your urine. For men, you have pelvic floor muscles too. And usually the cue that works for them is like, can you lift up the tip of the penis? And so, yeah, I think that's all the information.
Whatever tip works, pun intended.
Yeah. Men, your anatomy is a little different. You luckily don't have as many pelvic floor issues, but it is possible. But yeah, I think that's like what
now,
people see.
When you talk about like how they should automatically work, are we referring to things like, would you say it's like almost like reflexive bracing where breathing mechanics play such a big, big role in people being able to actually do it properly?
Yeah, it's kind of along those lines, you know, like if we don't have any pelvic floor issues, those muscles normally just hold our bladder until we need to go. And then when we go to the toilet to pee or poop, they relax. So it just happens automatically. And yes, it's sort of like reflexive bracing. Like, yeah, when it comes to exercise, like they just contract. So I have this tool I use in the clinic called biofeedback. It's these sensors that go on the muscles. And if we hooked it up when people were walking, you would see like every step, the pelvic floor muscles turn on, but then they should turn off. Or if people are laying down and they like move their leg, it's like the biofeedback goes up. So it should just automatically do that. And so I tell my clients that in the long run, we want your pelvic floor muscles to get back to that state. We don't want you to have to actively Kegel. So sometimes that's a strategy early on, but we want to train it so that it will just reflexively work.
Gotcha. And now when it comes to things like, I know we touched on C-section recovery, I saw like you did a really cool series on your Instagram about it. What are some things that, I guess, what are some effects from the C-section that people need to understand? Like, hey, this is what happens to your body. And how does the physical therapy help with that?
Yeah. So part of pelvic floor therapy, kind of our training, is all of pregnancy. So a couple things I tell people is just because you had a C-section doesn't mean you won't have pelvic floor issues, like bladder issues. Because a lot of moms, they go into labor and they try to have a natural vaginal birth, but it doesn't work. And then they have a C-section. So they actually have both issues they kind of have to heal afterwards. But when it comes to C-section specifically, so, you know, a lot of what I see from my clients is they are scared to use their abs again. They are scared to move because they had this major abdominal surgery. Often it's traumatic, it's emergent, it wasn't in their plans or their vision of birth. So I see people probably a lot earlier than you might see them after having a baby.
I would hope so.
Yes. So I think a lot of people, they're just a lot of fear of like, what is safe, what is not safe, you know? And they don't technically cut through your abdominal muscles. They sort of like move the muscles around and like go underneath, but they cut through all these layers. So you do need to like re-strengthen your abs. I mean, just from being pregnant, your abdominal muscles get, you know, some of the exercises I posted on my Instagram series were just general like mobility things, because often that scar can get really tense and tight. And so once the scar is healed, the staples or stitches are healed, we want to start moving our trunk and things like cat-cow and thread the needle, like just simple like mobility exercises to that will help with the scar healing so it doesn't get so stuck. Sometimes it kind of makes this like, we call it a shelf, like an indentation. And that's like some scar tissue forming underneath. And over time, like usually that's like an aesthetic thing, but it also can limit a person's mobility, like it can cause pain and pulling from the scar. So in the early days, or, you know, when you start training again, it's like we want to really work on mobility and just getting the spine moving, getting the hips moving, and having a safe way to sort of rebuild abdominal strength.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I know one of the big things too, when it comes to the abs in particular, I know some people get a little bit freaked out, like when they have a little protrusion or something like that, especially if they have something like, say, diastasis recti, for example, where it's like sometimes the abs will like dome. And we know that we don't really want that to happen all the time, right? Like, what would you say to somebody that might have that going on?
Yeah, I feel like this became a hot topic, and I'm trying to like feel it out if it's still a hot topic, but I think it's important to address because, again, sort of like Kegels.
I think it's warm enough. It's kind of on the stove right now.
Yeah.
It's simmering.
Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, is it my world that changed? You know, and sometimes the message in the rest of the world is still a different message. But yeah, I think over time, I'm less concerned about it, but there's sort of a, I think because it became a really hot topic, any little bit of doming, people were like freaking out, like, am I ruining my abs? And so what doming is, so number one, anyone who goes through a pregnancy is going to have some abdominal separation. That's just, it's going to happen. That's our body's adaptation. And then we think maybe it's a little bit genetic, like your connective tissue, your muscle thickness is probably a piece of it. And then, you know, how you carried the baby. Like I see a lot of my moms that are short or have short torsos, like they have to grow forward a lot. So they have more separation. That's just versus like a tall mom, she has more space for the baby. And so we should pay attention to this, but I kind of think we don't need to be so obsessed with it. Because it's going to happen. You can't prevent it in pregnancy, but you should pay attention. Like if you're seeing a lot of doming or coning, what that means is it's too, challenging of an exercise that in technical terms, I don't know how to say this in any other words, but the intra-abdominal pressure. So it's sort of like, the pressure going out is more than the muscles can control. So I think we should use it as a warning sign and pay attention. And then we got to modify the exercise, like take it down a little bit. You know, what I see in like the general exercise population is like, I want to get my body back. I'm going back to boot camp at 6 weeks postpartum. I'm doing all these things, but like your body went through this major change, right? And I tell people, like, you really got to pay attention and build strength before you're going back to, like, HIIT exercise. And so that means maybe you got to really scale back your abdominal exercise, especially if you're having doming or coning, and pay attention to that. And if you build a better foundation early on, it's going to serve you so much better down the road. You're going to have less injuries down the road. You know, so I really try to tell people, like, think about it in the big picture, and really build that foundation in the early days. And so maybe that means doing less, not doing as much as you want. But I think that's where a good trainer can help you sort of figure out, you know, for some people who, let's say they like to run, that's their cardio, but they're having a lot of bladder leakage, right? Like, okay, can we substitute a different kind of cardio? And that's what I try to coach my patients on. If they're in a group setting, you know, if they're doing CrossFit or something, and it's like, oh, box jumps aren't good, but like, okay, is the purpose of box jumps cardio? Can you substitute the assault bike, right? Can you, sometimes we got to think really outside of the box, but what is the purpose of that exercise? And can we substitute something better until you can get better at that exercise? So that was a little tangent from.
See, I like your use of the pun there, getting outside of the box, outside of the CrossFit box. But it seems like one of the big things that a lot of people struggle with is just unrealistic expectations, because I think it's been glorified, especially in Hollywood and things like that, where it's like bounce back after baby number, whatever. And they leave out the fact that they had plastic surgery, a bunch of personal chefs, and they worked out like a crazy person because they didn't mom like most people mom and take care of their kid 24/7. Now, that being said, when it comes to like tearing any other muscle in our body, like if you tore your bicep, you wouldn't go right back to doing a bunch of curls immediately, like a month after. You'd be like, I'm going to baby the shit out of this until it's back to where it needs to be. And then I'm going to progress slowly. But when it comes to our core, especially after something as big and traumatic as childbirth, it's like, nope, I saw this woman on the cover of a magazine, I got to do that.
I totally agree. You know, and I think the internet makes it worse, right? Because it's like someone who has good genetics and has all these help services postpartum, right? You know, like I really try to emphasize that to my moms too, is like, I think now in the fitness world, I love all the emphasis on recovery, right? Like sleep, nutrition, hydration. And I try to tell that to my moms, like, especially in the early days, you're not sleeping. And that's a major part of recovery and injury prevention and being able to have the energy to work out, right? And you're probably not eating super healthy, yeah. Right? Like you're kind of in survival mode at the beginning. And you're spot on with what you said about celebrities. They have all these people helping them and they're not doing the normal average mom things. And you don't see that. You just see the beautiful images. So I really try to put in perspective of overall fitness, like in health and athletics. It's like recovery is such an important part of that. And you're just not getting that. So you have to reset your expectations.
Yeah. Cause especially if we're talking about the concept of bouncing back, recovery is the main thing that's going to allow you to bounce back. Because if you just go ahead and kill yourself with exercise and the baby is waking you up 10 times a night, you're not only getting stressed because of the mom duties, but now exercise has now turned into a negative stressor. And the adaptations you're getting are going to be abysmal compared to what you would be able to get if you met yourself where you're at.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, the other thing I wanted to touch on too, because I saw a really, really informative post on endometriosis physical therapy, because I guess this would fall in line with what you were talking about. Sometimes it's not people who have been pregnant. Sometimes there are conditions that can pop up that require physical therapy in certain situations. And I know endometriosis could be a big one too. And for anybody who doesn't know, that's basically like there's tissue growing where it shouldn't be. And then sometimes they got to go in and remove that tissue. Sometimes it can lead to things like painful sex and other stuff like that. What are some things that you notice that people do have issues with and how physical therapy can help them with that?
Yeah. So endometriosis, it's exactly like you said, it's usually like tissue that's similar to the uterus, grows outside the uterus. So usually your periods are really heavy, they're really painful. And so it can be a whole spectrum, the disease, right, of like mild to like debilitating. And it's another thing that we don't have a lot of good medical science on. But physical therapy can help. So yeah, a lot of people, like one of the main things is pelvic floor muscle tightness. And so that can lead to painful sex. It can also lead to bladder leakage or bladder issues too. Because again, we need the muscles to be like a trampoline. But yeah, in pelvic floor therapy, we work directly on the muscles inside the pelvic floor. And we sort of work out any tightness just like we would on any other muscle. And then I give a lot of people like stretching exercises, breathing exercises, mobility stuff, right? Because sort of the body's kind of stuck in this like painful fight or flight mode, and things are just, they're painful. So there's tightness, right? That's like a sort of the cycle the body gets stuck in with chronic pain. It's like pain makes muscles tight, tight muscles create more pain. So we're trying to break that up at wherever we can along the cycle, whether it's like direct massage, manual therapy to the muscles. But also, yeah, really, figuring out like what's a healthy exercise routine for those people. It's sort of like what you just said about new moms. It's like if too much might become a negative stressor on the body, but we need exercise. So what's a good type of exercise or what's a good amount? And then, yeah, lots and lots of stretching and breathing exercises and healthy eating. Because endometriosis, we think of it as a pelvic disease, but it really is systemic. It affects kind of all aspects of someone's life. And so for those people, often they have really heavy periods. And so they might have to kind of train around that. Like they might have, some of them can't get out of bed for like a few days around their period. And so, you know, sort of thinking about the whole lifestyle as, on the big scale, the big picture of, you know, what can we do day by day, but then how do we sort of optimize a healthy life for you?
Yeah, then that is going to be so, so helpful for people listening, because I feel like that especially is one of those things where people feel a little bit isolated on an island because it's something nobody really talks about. And I think getting this to be part of a bigger conversation is huge, just making it normal to talk about this stuff, because like you said, probably not very widely represented when it comes to like research and stuff, because hey, it doesn't apply to young white dudes. So there's probably not an abundance of research on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Pelvic floor therapists, we like to talk about all the things. And I think for trainers is, you know, however open you feel or comfortable feeling talking about these things, you know, like you're sort of part psychologist too, right? Like people come to you with their problems. And so I think it's good to have, not that you want them to, but same for me. I was like, I feel like I should have got a psychology degree. But it's also just knowing your resources, right? Like,
wouldn't it have been so helpful? I feel like anybody in any borderline healthcare situation needs a minor in psychology, just as like a nice little, just here's what to expect.
Totally. And that's like part of it. You're trying to help people with their lifestyle, and it's like the mental health aspect of it too. But I think for trainers or anyone, right? Yeah. That it's like, yeah, like the more comfortable you are, the more people will be comfortable talking to you and, you know, for you to have resources. So find a pelvic floor therapist in your community. Like we want to help trainers. We want to help people in the population, like to have good trainers that we trust too, to send people to who aren't just going to kill them and, you know, put them in a calorie deficit and like make them do like a workout that's not healthy for them.
Yes. And that network is one of the things that I feel like not enough people have access to, where it's like, listen, here is a personal trainer who does things by the book, gets really good results, and they have a physical therapist that they can refer you to. They have a pelvic floor physical therapist they could refer you to, a doctor that specializes in menopause. And like, if you can get like a total 360 healthcare team, you're setting yourself up for an incredibly like successful fitness and health journey.
Totally. That's the dream for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. In an ideal world, that would be like everybody's healthcare, everybody's like access would include things like that. And let's say somebody right now is listening and they're like, yeah, I don't really have any of that. Like, what would you say, like, when it comes to their conversations with their primary doctor or something, and they have concerns about some of the stuff we talked about, like, what's the best way to get a consult with someone like yourself that's in this realm?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still not easy. I think, you know, yeah, like you said, in an ideal world, we would have access to all of these things. But even OBGYNs are not referring to pelvic floor therapy. And it's sort of like orthopedic surgeons refer to physical therapy all the time. So we're not there yet.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of doctors are still like unsure of exactly what pelvic floor therapy is, especially older doctors. I know younger doctors are learning this in school, like not in detail, but like at least they know this is a thing. So, you know, I think, yes, bring it up with your primary doctor, because often even OBGYNs aren't asking these questions about, do you have bladder leakage? Is sex painful? How are your periods, right? It's just sort of like, when was your last period? When was your last pap smear? General blood work, but they're not asking these other questions. But I think if you bring it up to them, they're gonna hopefully help find you resources.
Yeah. And what would be like a, I guess, like a basic checklist of things that people could be like bringing to their doctor to notify them, hey, I'm having issues with this, this, and this. Like, do you think pelvic floor PT might be worth exploring?
Yeah. So I think, you know, doctors don't even like to talk about sex or bladder issues. So I think if you're having any painful sex, bring that up to them. If you're having any bladder leakage, or you feel like, you know, any bladder issues, it's not just leakage, but like maybe you feel like you're always going to the bathroom. You know, a lot of clients, if they feel like they're always going to the bathroom, they get tested for UTI. It's not a UTI, but doctors don't know what to do. So they just give them antibiotics anyway, which drives me insane. Like, we know.
Gotta love the antibiotic generation. And that's like, yeah, that's another thing. Like, I mean, my girlfriend's a doctor and she tells me all the time, like, that's like the great divide is like certain doctors that just don't keep up, just antibiotics for every little thing. And then the younger ones are like, no.
Totally. Like, we went through this time when like super bugs came out of like too many antibiotics, but it's still a thing. But pelvic floor therapy, sometimes if people are going to the bathroom too often, or they feel like they have pain with peeing, or they feel like they can't empty their bladder completely, sometimes that's a pelvic floor muscle issue. You know, I tell people like, yes, get checked for STDs, STIs, get checked for UTI, bladder issues, like get all the medical clearance. But if it's nothing medical, then probably it's pelvic floor therapy. And then for your population, if they're approaching menopause, you know, I'm a huge proponent of menopause hormones. I know they have a big stigma. I think that's sort of like coming around again. But there's two kinds of menopausal hormones. There's systemic hormones for like the hot flashes, the sleep, all the systemic things. But then there's also vaginal estrogen, which, so to get a little anatomy lesson in detail, when you go through menopause, and also this happens in postpartum, your estrogen is lower and your vaginal tissues on the outside become thinner and drier. And in postpartum, this is temporary. As long as you're breastfeeding or pumping, it will go back to normal. But in menopause, like your body just stops producing estrogen. So you can get vaginal estrogen that's not systemically absorbed. It's just localized, and it really helps thicken and support the bladder. So for a lot of my patients, my menopausal women, but also some pregnancy and postpartum, you know, we work on all the muscle things, all the like physical stuff. But sometimes I tell them like, maybe this is the missing component, is you just need more support to these tissues, and vaginal estrogen can do that. You know, I think there was this big stigma, this big study in the 90s came out and said like estrogen causes breast cancer. But now we're reinterpreting that as like, maybe not as much as we thought. But also vaginal estrogen is different than systemic hormones. So there's like a lot of fear around estrogen and breast cancer, which I get, and I can't prescribe that, only your doctor can in the US. So it's definitely a conversation with your doctor. But I think especially for women in menopause and postpartum too, again, doctors aren't necessarily going out of their way to like recommend these things to you, but they can be very helpful. So I think, unfortunately, you have to bring up these questions to your doctor. You know, in today's healthcare system, you got to advocate for yourself. You know, and I exactly. think also if you're not if you're not satisfied, like, it's okay to get a second opinion.
Yep. And especially in the US, we have the luxury of being able to, I mean, for lack of a better word, shop for doctors. But I mean, it's not like in other countries where it's standardized healthcare and you get assigned somebody. But if you have that inkling, like, mm-hmm. I don't really think that this person cares about me either way or wants to hear me out, it might be a good sign that it's time to try somebody else that you trust. Because like it or not, you need a doctor in your corner for a multitude of different reasons. Now, another thing I think with the hormone discussion is that a lot of people, like as I furthered my education on this stuff, is that a lot of them are personalized cocktails. It's not like one size fits all, where it's like it's just mm-hmm. one standardized like practice that everybody gets this much estrogen or this much testosterone or whatever hormone we're talking about. The people that do this stuff personalize it to your specific situation. So some people might need less. And if that dosage doesn't have as much of a risk factor, then maybe it's worth pursuing.
Yeah, I've been trying to educate myself more on menopause lately, just because I'm seeing more and more people in that population. And yeah, it's not, there's no standardized dosage. And often what I've been reading is it's based on symptoms as far as like the systemic hormones. Vaginal estrogen is a pretty standard dose. Like usually mostly it's a cream. It can also be a tablet that you insert or a ring. But usually like the cream, it's twice, like every day for 2 weeks and then twice a week for life. So that's a standard dose, but the systemic hormones, yeah, it's, sometimes you got to play with it with your doctor and figure out like how much of each hormone you need. Yeah, that's a good point. And so, you know, you really have to like try it, give it a try, and then go back to your doctor and make adjustments. And for some of my patients, it takes months to kind of like find the right dosage, and it's frustrating. Like, and what I see in my women that are going through menopause, it's sort of like a big unknown, and like they did not realize like, oh my god, I'm exhausted, right? Like I think we think it's just hot flashes, but it's like I'm exhaustion, like fatigue is like one of the big things, you know. And then also I think comes along like, why can't I lose this weight, which is sometimes hormonal. But actually, I read a really interesting study recently that said our metabolism doesn't change that much, but and people that do the same amount of exercise they've always done, but what difference they found was like the little bits of other activity during their day was much less, which is like very interesting.
Yep. Yeah, it gets into the whole conversation of like NEAT, like non-exercise activity thermogenesis, where that seems to be impacted heavily by hormones, by lifestyle factors, because we don't feel the need to move as much. But that's a big chunk of the calories that we burn and use throughout the day. Like if you look at like your total daily energy expenditure, don't quote me on this, but I believe the non-exercise activity thermogenesis, that NEAT, accounts for like 15-20% of your entire calories for the whole day. So if we're talking 2000 calories, that's a few hundred calories right there, and boom, there goes your deficit. So it makes total sense. Yeah. Awesome. Now, I know that most of this discussion has been geared towards the women who have just had a baby or people that are experiencing peri or postmenopause. Let's talk about the people that you mentioned in the beginning, that like 60, 70, 80, who technically are in postmenopause, because pretty much anything after that 365 days since the last period is postmenopause. But like we're talking like later in life. So that population, what are some common issues that you see them coming in for, and some of the things that you found are the most helpful?
Yeah, I would say the number one thing in that population is bladder issues. And I always like to tell people, just like exercise, physical therapy, it's never too late. You can always make changes. Because a lot of times people think like, I'm 70, this is just the way it is, right? And maybe it's not going to be perfect, but it can be. Like, I've had a lot of 70-year-olds who come in with a lot of leakage, a lot of like urinary frequency, urgency. And after, you know, so many weeks, they're better. They're like 100% better, like no more pads, no more leakage. So it is possible. It's like the one thing I really want to tell people, like it's never, ever too late. But yeah, I would say bladder leakage is the number one thing. And then also, I see this more like in the postmenopausal, like 50 plus and up into the later years, is feeling like you always need to go to the bathroom. And that is often more habit-based and other things rather than just pelvic floor muscle directly. And so with those people, we work on, you know, sort of going to the bathroom on a regular schedule, not going all the time, like some strategies to delay that urge, right? Like we sort of have to reprogram the brain and bladder connection. And then it's some other lifestyle things, like can you drink more throughout the day rather than like all at once, things like that. So those are the two main things. I see a couple other like bowel issues in the later years. Sometimes painful sex, but most of the time across the board, like older women are not so interested in sex, but some are. And so sometimes,
hey, we know the guys pelvic are. Pain that doesn't go away.
Yeah. So sometimes it's just like for my husband. But there's some women that still are having sex and like good for them. You know, but those women I really try to, we work on if there's any tightness, but also if they're not on vaginal hormones, you know, I really try to encourage them to have that conversation with their doctor. Yeah. So all the same issues can happen at any stage of life. But I would say definitely like bladder issues are the most common and they can get better. They do get better.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it sounds like with all these tips and everything, we're basically going to put Depends out of business. Now, I know they talk about big pharma, big seed oil and all that stuff. But if Carrie goes missing, we know we got to look at big adult diapers. They definitely came for her.
That's our goal in pelvic floor therapy, to get rid of all the Depends. But also, I would say now what's popping up is all these other like gimmicky quick fix things, right? These Kegel exercisers, which sometimes they're useful, but even more than that, it's like there's these chairs at the doctor's office that do Kegels for you, or there's these shorts that do Kegels for you that promise all these big things. And it's just like health and fitness, there's no quick fix. So those are the ones that really like drive me crazy. Because they're
those just sound like those money. Like QVC, yeah. Those just sound like those QVC equipment thing, like exercise equipment that you see at 2 a.m. when you wake up from falling asleep on the couch, and it's like it burns all this body fat. You're gonna get toned, nice legs from this vibrating machine, and it's like we know that's bullshit, but the clients, the patients, totally. Not always.
Totally. Yeah, that's exactly what I think about. Like, oh, get your six-pack abs. Just put this machine on 20 minutes a day, right? It's like the same selling point for pelvic floor issues. And I think that population is even more vulnerable because, again, it's like their doctors aren't talking to them about this. They feel isolated. So then they're like, okay, $300, I'll buy this thing, right? And then they don't know how to use it. It's not helping. And from a pelvic floor therapist perspective, sometimes it's the opposite. Like a lot of our population that comes into the clinic, they actually have tight, their muscles are too tight. And then they're like, bought this trainer thing that just creates more tension. And so it's actually having the opposite effect. So we have to sort of like undo that mentality of like, you have to relax before you can get stronger, right? So anyway. Like yep. All the gimmicky things.
You gotta walk before you can sprint.
Totally.
Now, I know that there has been a slight delay in our responses during this conversation. So thank you guys for sticking with us. I know it's been tough, but we're having like some really good conversation here. Now, you have given us so much good information. Like, honestly, this is probably the most dense episode I've ever done, where it's like you can apply this to so many things, get so much great information. Now, if they want to continue learning from you and all the really good stuff that you put out, because I'll tell you guys firsthand experience, Carrie puts out some incredibly helpful educational videos on her Instagram. So I highly recommend checking it out after this. But Carrie, where else can they find you besides your Instagram?
Yeah, thank you for that. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, a little bit TikTok, but I'm not as consistent there, but it all at Recharge Therapy. And then my website is rechargetherapy.com. And I have tons of information on there. Oh yeah, I have a YouTube channel too, which I think is also Recharge Therapy. But yeah, I have a lot of blogs, a lot of videos. And then I have a few online courses about, I have a bladder program online. If you don't have access to an in-person pelvic floor therapist, or you're not ready for that intimate experience. And I have a few other programs, like a C-section program. So lots of resources on my website.
Awesome. And those will all be linked below, so you guys don't have to go searching. Just click away down below. Now, you know, I say it pretty much every time we have a guest on. If you have at any point during our conversation thought, oh my God, I have a friend or a family member that needs to hear this. Maybe they just gave birth. Maybe they're in menopause and they're experiencing some of these issues. Send it their way and just say, hey, Brian and Carrie, say hi, listen and learn, and you'll be happy that you did. So thank you in advance, and thank you for sticking with us the entire way. And I will see you all same time, same place next week. But until then, go kick some ass. I'll see you later.